2,500 years ago, God inspired a man to write a book, and the writer was the prophet Daniel. Mr. Armstrong, writing in the US and GB in Prophecy, said of Daniel, "One of the very pivotal books of prophecy is the book of Daniel. Actually, the prophet Daniel was not the author of the book known by his name. The living God was its author. The message was transmitted to Daniel by God's angel. Daniel put to writing to be preserved until our time what he heard." He added later on, "The greatest mystery book of the entire Bible to most has been the book of Revelation, but the book of Daniel is the key to the book of Revelation." And then further to that, he said in the same chapter, "Matthew 24, I think, might be called the principal book of prophecy so far as Jesus Christ is concerned." So the book of Daniel is pivotal, and it was written approximately 2,500 years ago. Now, Christ inspired the prophet Isaiah to write. If you turn to Isaiah 46 and verse 9. Isaiah 46 and verse 9. We read, "Remember the former things of old, for I am God and there is none else. I am God and there is none like me, declaring the end from the beginning, and from ancient times the things that have not yet been done, saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will do my pleasure." Now, I happen to be looking through different translations here, and there's one called the Bible in Contemporary Language, which can be quite humorous at times, but this particular verse, these two verses, it's translated as, "Remember your history, your long and rich history. I am God, the only God you've had or ever will have, incomparable, irreplaceable. From the very beginning, telling you what the ending will be, all along letting you in on what is going to happen." I think that makes it really clear. Well, did he? Well, here's an example from the Hebrew Scriptures. Christ inspired Moses to tell the children of Israel, and you can find this in Deuteronomy 31. If you turn to Deuteronomy 31 and read this, because we've read this several times over the years, and it's still, quite frankly, mind-boggling. Deuteronomy 31, verse 29. "For I know that after my death," this is what Moses was instructed to tell the children of Israel by the one who became Jesus Christ. "For I know that after my death you will utterly corrupt yourselves and turn aside from the way which I have commanded you, and evil will befall you in the latter days." Now, I don't know about you, but if I ask a question, why warn a bunch of hard-headed Israelites that if they got it all wrong, that their descendants would suffer several thousand years later? That doesn't really add up. They weren't even very worried about obeying God back then, were they? Then if you come to the New Testament, if you turn to 1 Corinthians 10, 1 Corinthians 10, 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 11, this is the Apostle Paul writing. He says, now all these things, he's been talking about the coming out of Egypt and going through the sea and all the troubles and trials and the things that were committed during the wilderness. And he says, now all these things happen to them for examples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. So, again, you get this feeling that the whole Bible has been masterminded from beginning to end, specifically for the people at the end time. Now, Christ inspired his end time apostle to write. Now, these books in the Old Testament are not so-called Old Testament stuff. They were written for us. And written for us is, as usual with Mr. Armstrong, in capital letters. So let's look at one of these Old Testament books, the book of Daniel. Today we'll look at an overview of the book. Look at the main events and the major happenings in the life of Daniel, just to see how God actually worked with this man, because he had the most extraordinary life. We can date the book quite specifically because Daniel was taken captive at the very first invasion by Babylon in 604 BC. There were three invasions. The next one was in 595 BC. You can read about that in Jeremiah 38, verse 17, which is rather interesting, actually. If you read that verse, you make a note of it, Jeremiah 38, verse 17. Then said Jeremiah unto Zedekiah, says the king, thus says the Eternal, the God of hosts, the God of Israel, if you will assuredly go forth into the king of the princes of Babylon, then your soul shall live, and this city shall not be burned with fire, and you will live and your house. In other words, you remember Jeremiah being locked up in prison for so many years, and this king was trying to protect him. And he said to the king, if you take yourself and the princes and all your family and go out to meet the approaching army, yes, they'll take you captive, but you'll live, and the city will not be burned. And amazingly, he got it right. And yes, he was taken captive, but the city was not destroyed. However, in 585, the third Babylonian invasion, which you read about in Jeremiah 52, we see the total destruction of Jerusalem. Interestingly there, the king tried to slip away in the dark and was pursued, and his family were all slaughtered, and he was blinded and taken into captivity, and he remained in chains until the day he died. So let's start with Daniel 1, verse 1. And again, this is quite well dated. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. He'd only been king for a very, very short space of time when this happened. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. Notice this. The Lord gave Jehoiakim into Nebuchadnezzar's hand. God, and this is one lesson we get from the book of Daniel, all the way through, God manipulates kings so easily, it takes no effort. No effort at all. And he gave this king because Judah was going to be punished as a nation, primarily for breaking the Sabbath. And part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God, and he brought the vessels unto the treasury, the treasure house of his God. And the king spoke to Ashpenaz, the master of the eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, of the king's seed, and of the princes, children in whom were no blemish, but were well favoured and skilful in all wisdom and cunning in knowledge and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach and learn the tongue of the Chaldeans. Back then they realised that there was tremendous value in having people that had brains, and they could be used. And the king appointed to them daily provisions of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. So they had to be nourished and taught and trained to speak in the Chaldean language and learn the Chaldean ways for 3 years before they were presented before the king. Now among these were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Unto the prince of the eunuchs he gave them names, for he gave unto Daniel the name Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. But Daniel proposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into favour and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. You see, here again, God is intervening. He's giving Daniel tremendous favour in the eyes of this man, who is basically his boss. This is a key point. God is nurturing him, he's bringing him on, and he's showing Daniel all the time that I'm here, I'm with you, don't worry, it'll work out. And the prince of verse 10, and the prince of the eunuch said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who has appointed your meat and drink, for why should he see your faces worse like than the children which are of your sort? Then shall you make me endanger my head with the king. In other words, what he's saying here is, if I give you the kind of food you're asking, you're going to waste away, and when I present you to the king, he's going to wonder why you're all skinny and scrawny and all these other guys are nice, fat and plump and healthy looking, and I'll lose my head. And Daniel said to Melzer, whom the prince of the eunuchs has set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael and Azariah, prove thy servants, I beseech you, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Then let our countenance be looked upon before you, and the countenance of the children that eat the portion of the king's food, meat, and as you see us, deal with your servants. And this is like, give us a trial. Just give us what we want. Give us the basic food for 10 days, and let's see what we look like at the end of 10 days. And, you know, if we're getting a bit thin and scrawny and looking sick, then fine, we'll eat the king's food. Verse 15, at the end of 10 days, their countenance appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Thus Melzer took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink and gave them pulse. Now the interesting question is here, what was the king's food? What was the king's food? Was it pork? Was it unclean fish? We're not told, but it was defiling. And Daniel was sticking to what he knew was God's law. In verse 17, as for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. See, here again, this is a gift. Does it apply to us today? Well, turn to Exodus 31. Let's just briefly check something in Exodus 31 here. See, when we think in terms of asking God for help from gifts, we tend to think in spiritual things, because that's the way we're headed. But see what happens here. Exodus 31, verse 1. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, see, I have called by name Bezaleel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah. And I have filled him with the Spirit of God in wisdom and in understanding and in knowledge and in all manner of workmanship to devise works, to work in gold and in silver and in brass, and in cutting of stones to set them, and in carving of timber to work in all manner of workmanship. In other words, God is actually given here, this man, physical skills. So let's go back to Daniel. Daniel 1 verse 18. Now at the end of days that the king had said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. So Daniel had already been in captivity here now for 3 years. Verse 19, and the king communed with them, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. So these captives, who had been educated and schooled now for 3 years in the ways of the Chaldeans, were seen as being so fantastic that they actually stood in the king's presence. So if he wanted it, he didn't have Google. He went to these chappies who had tremendous minds. Verse 20, and in all matters of wisdom and understanding, the king inquired of them. He found them 10 times better than all the magicians and the astrologers that were in his realm. And Daniel continued even until the first year of King Cyrus. Now, just an insert here. King Cyrus, go to Isaiah. Back to Isaiah chapter 44. They say, we're coming into difficult times. We're going to see governments crunch. We're going to see people deposed. We're going to see new people coming to power. And we've got to keep in mind that God is in total, absolute control of who rules. Isaiah 44, verse 28. Talking about God. God says of Cyrus, he is my shepherd and shall perform all my pleasure. Even saying to Jerusalem, you shall be built, and to the temple, your foundation shall be laid. This is what Cyrus did. But this was years before he was even born. This is in Isaiah. It was many years before Cyrus was born. And if you go to just a few pages on to Isaiah 45 verse 1, it says, thus says the Eternal to his anointed, to Cyrus. So you see, these are Gentile kings. And yet God is showing us he's got total control over them. The interesting thing is that if you check in history, a lot of writers seem to think that Cyrus was a very good king, that he looked after people. He was very interested in what people needed and giving it to them. And he was regarded as being a very positive ruler, which Nebuchadnezzar hadn't necessarily always been. I go to Daniel 2. I think we've entitled Daniel 2, The Impossible Dream. Because this is a situation which you would not want to find yourself in. Daniel 2, verse 1. In the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams, where his spirit was troubled, and his sleep brake from him. And the king commanded to call the magicians and the astrologers and the sorcerers and the Chaldeans for to show the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king. So the king had a dream that troubled him, yet he could not remember what the dream was all about. Now this is a bit of a conundrum for him, isn't it? All these wise men are all there strutting their stuff, all probably dressed very splendidly before the king. And the king says, I've had a dream. I don't know what it's about. It's obviously important because it's troubling me. So you're going to tell me what the dream was, and you're going to like give me the interpretation of the dream, at which there was quite a lot of knee-knocking going on. Verse 3, and the king said to them, I have dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream. Then spake the Chaldeans to the king in Syriac, O king, live forever. Tell thy servants the dream, and we will show you the interpretation. And the king said to the Chaldeans, the thing is gone from me. If you will not make known unto me the dream with the interpretation thereof, you shall be cut in pieces, and your house shall be made a dunghill. He certainly had a way with words, did King Nebuchadnezzar. Now the wise men were stumped, and all they could come up with is in verse 11, and they said to the king, it is a rare thing that the king requires, and it is none other that can show it before the king except the gods whose dwelling is not in flesh. That's an interesting comment there. They're saying, look, this is a spiritual thing, it's beyond us. But the king wasn't really amused, you see, because in verse 12, he said, for this cause the king was very angry and very furious and commanded to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. And the decree went forth that the wise men should be slain, and they sought Daniel and his fellows to be slain. Verse 16, then Daniel went in and desired of the king that he would give him time and that he would show the king the interpretation. So you can now imagine this situation. I don't know how many astrologers and soothsayers and all the rest of it there were, but there's probably quite a fair number. And Daniel then went to his house, verse 17, and made the thing known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions. I would suggest there was some very serious praying took place. Verse 18, that they would desire mercies of the God of heaven concerning this secret, that Daniel and his fellows should not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. In verse 19, then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. And then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Verse 20, Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God for ever and ever, for wisdom and might are his, and he changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding. He reveals the deep secret things. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells with him. I thank you and praise you, O my God, the God of my fathers, who has given me wisdom and might, and has made known unto me now what we desired of you, for thou hast made known unto us the king's matter. So, what's interesting here is Daniel's uttering this prayer, but this is teaching for us. This is teaching for us today. When we have problems, that's how you deal with it. That's exactly how you deal with it. And he didn't have time. He didn't have time here to say, right, I'm going to fast for 3 weeks and get myself all straight. This was something that was now. So they got down, they knuckled in, and they prayed with great earnestness. I mean, their lives were on the line. And God answered. Verse 24. Then, therefore, Daniel went into Arioch, whom the king had ordained to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus unto him, destroy not the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king, and I will show unto the king the interpretation. Then Arioch brought Daniel before the king in haste, you can imagine, and thus and said unto him, I have found a man of the captains of Judah that will make known unto the king the interpretation. You know, you can imagine what's going on here. This would be quite a scene. This wasn't something that happened in a dark room. This would be like in the throne room, with the king sitting on his throne, advisors all around him, and probably quite a crowd in the background. And here's Daniel now being thrust into this situation. We tend to think of these things as being like one-on-one. This was like being really put under the spotlight. Verse 26, and the king answered and said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, are you able to make known unto me the dream which I have seen and the interpretation thereof? And Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secret which the king has demanded cannot the wise man, the astrologers, the magicians, and the soothsayers show unto the king. But, There is a God in heaven that reveals secrets and makes known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Your dream and the visions of your head upon your bed are these. You see, he gives God the credit. He doesn't say, listen, I'm some smart aleck youngster here. I got all this knowledge. I'm wonderful. I'm marvelous. He says, there's a God here. Give me the information. I'm going to give it to you. The question again, why? What was the point of telling the king of the events to take place in 2,500 years in the future, in our time? This wasn't for Nebuchadnezzar, it was for us. It was for us. But at the same time, it's showing us how God is working with Daniel and how God is actually working with Nebuchadnezzar, as we'll see as we go through here. As for thee, O king, your thoughts came into your mind upon your bed and should come to pass thereafter, and he has revealed secrets. He that reveals secrets maketh known to thee what shall come to pass. But as for me, this secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have any more than any living, but for their sakes that shall make known the interpretation to the king, and that thou mightest know the thoughts of your heart. Daniel makes it very clear to Nebuchadnezzar that it is God that gives the interpretation of the dream, not Daniel. Verse 31. Thou, O king, sawest and behold a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before you, and the form thereof was terrible. The image's head was of fine gold, and his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. You sawest till that the stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay, and broke them to pieces. Then was the iron and the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold broken in pieces together, and become like chaff of the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away, that no more place was found for them. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain that filled the whole earth. That is the summation of 2,500 years of history. Quite incredible. This is the dream. This is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. So he said, now I'm going to tell you what it means. Because by this time, I should think the king was thinking, yeah, that's what it was. I remember that. That's coming back to me now, and I remember that. He says, you, O king, are king of kings. For the God of heaven has given you a kingdom and power and strength and glory. See, he's pointing out to Nebuchadnezzar, you're sitting there because of God. No other reason. He has put you there. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of the heaven, has he given into your hand and has made you ruler over them all. You are the head of gold. I mean, this was the first really world ruling empire that we're seeing here. And after, verse 39, and after thee shall arise another kingdom inferior to thine, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth, and the fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron, for as much as iron breaks into pieces and subdues all things, and as iron that breaketh all these shall it break into pieces and bruise. Which is talking, of course, of the Roman Empire. And I mean, the Romans were harsh, they were brutal. When they went into a country, they took it over in a big way. And wherefore you saw the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, for as much as you saw the iron mixed with miry clay. In other words, the feet were brittle. I've actually seen iron that's in a casting where muck had got into it, and it's like full of holes. And you just take a hammer and just give it a bang and the whole thing just shatters. There's no strength in it. And it says, verse 42, yeah. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so that kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. What we're looking at now in Europe, what's coming in Europe, is going to be partly strong. Who can make war with the beast? And yet, it's going to be broken, and it's going to be broken very, very suddenly. To where they stand on the shore and look back and see the whole thing up in flames, until, how could this happen? And whereas You saw iron mixed with miry clay. They shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. If we look at Europe, what have we got? We've got a whole hodgepodge of nations, all speaking different languages, all with different cultures. We know what's going to glue them together. That's the religion. The religion will be the glue, the Roman Catholic Church. That's where the unity will come. But underneath it all, there'll still be Romanians or Bulgarians and Spanish and Germans and so on. They won't give up their natural culture, so they won't become a really unified mass. 45. For as much as you saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that in broken pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver and the gold, the great God has made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation is sure. What he's saying is all these kingdoms that have come together over the years, down over the ages, are going to be destroyed totally and utterly by this great stone cut without hands, referring obviously to Christ. Then the king Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face and worshipped Daniel and commanded that they should offer an oblation and sweet odours unto him. And the king answered unto Daniel and said, of a truth, it is that your God is a God of gods, and the Lord of kings, and a revealer of secrets, seeing that you could reveal this secret. Then the king made Daniel a great man, and gave him many great gifts, made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon, chief of the governors over all of the wise men of Babylon. Then Daniel requested of the king that he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the promise of Babylon, but Daniel sat in the gate of the king. And sitting in the gate back then was a term for sitting in judgment. He was basically like almost ruling the nation. However, as you can probably imagine, we do understand a little bit about human nature. You can imagine that in spite of the fact that Daniel saved the lives of these wise men by his interpretation of the dream, it didn't really make him very popular with the rest of the palace clique. And they frankly were out to get him. Which is very similar to what happened to Christ, if you think about it. You know, here he is, he sees a man who's lame, and he heals him. And immediately the Pharisees are out there trying to say, how can we get rid of this guy? It doesn't really make sense. If you were running a country, and there was a man running around your country, not causing any problems, healing people. The blind were getting their eyesight restored. Lepers were being completely cleansed. All sorts of problems being sorted. I mean, to me, you'd look after this man. He would be a tremendous asset to the nation. But not so. And the same thing happened to Daniel, as we'll see. Daniel 3. The next trial for poor old Daniel. Nebuchadnezzar, the king of kings, made an image of gold, whose height was 70 cubits, and the breadth 6 cubits, and set it in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Now, a rough estimation is this is about 45 to 50 feet tall. Then a herald cried aloud, to you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at the time when you hear the sound of the cornet, the flute, the harp, the sandbut, the psaltery, the dulcimer, and all kinds of music, you fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up. And whosoever falleth not down and worships shall be the same hour cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. It's almost like a forerunner of what happened to Christ, isn't it? Verse 12. There are certain Jews that whom you have set up over the affairs of the province of Babylon, you see? They're going to Nebuchadnezzar now. There are certain Jews that you set over the affairs of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded you. They serve not your gods, nor worship the golden image that you've set up. And Nebuchadnezzar spoke unto them and said, is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do you not serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now if you be ready, that at what time you hear the sound of the cornet, the flute, the harp, the sandbuck, the psaltery, and the dulcimer, and all kinds of music, you fall down and worship the image which I have made. Well, but if you worship not, you shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? Oh boy, he's about to find out. You see, he's already forgotten what happened with the interpretation of the dream, hasn't he? So now we're into the fiery furnace. Verse 16. Having been challenged, the three men, Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer you in this matter. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods, nor worship your golden image which you have set up. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent and the furnace exceeding hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He commanded that the furnace this is in verse 22. He actually commanded the furnace be heated up to three or four times its normal heat. As they threw the three men into the thing, the heat was so intense that the men who were actually doing the throwing in were actually burned to a frazzle. Verse 24. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonied, and rose up in haste and spoke and said to his counselors, did we not cast three men bound into the midst of the fire? And they said, well, true, O king. And he answered and said, well, lo, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. So I don't know what he was quite seeing here, but there was something different about the fourth being that was in that fire. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near the mouth of the burning fiery furnace, I don't think too close, and spake, saying, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither. And they came out from the midst of the fire. And the princes and the governors and the captain and the king's counselors being gathered together saw these men upon whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was a hair on their head singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire had passed on them. In other words, it was as if they had just not even been anywhere near the fire. Then Nebuchadnezzar spoke and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word and have yielded their bodies, that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Therefore, verse 29, I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. He certainly liked cutting people to bits and making them a dunghill. I don't think it would have been a very nice place to live. Babylon was reputed to be a very, very beautiful area because the king was a great builder and so on. But living with this kind of chap as the head honcho must have been quite a challenge. Now, chapter 4. Nebuchadnezzar was beginning to understand that Daniel was kind of like different, special maybe. In verse 8, he said, But at the last Daniel came in before me, whose surname was Belteshazzar, according to the name of my God, and in whom is the spirit of the holy gods, and before him I told the dream, saying. Now, we now get another dream where he saw a huge tree, and this tree was cut down, and an iron band was put round it. Now verse 18, let's just got drop down to verse 18. This dream I, King Nebuchadnezzar, have seen. Now thou, O Belteshazzar, declare the interpretation thereof, for as much as all the wise men in my kingdom are not able to make known unto me the interpretation, but you are able, for the spirit of the holy gods is in you. You see, he still didn't totally understand, but he's starting to get the point. However, Daniel's now faced with a problem. How do you turn around to a chap that likes cutting people in pieces and turning them into dunghills? How do you say to him, well, this is the interpretation of the dream? Let me listen to the dream. Verse 19. Then Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, was astonished. Yet again, I love that word. It takes astonished to a new level. And his thoughts troubled him. You can bet they did. Because he now had to tell the king the following. The king spake and said, Belteshazzar, let not the dream or the interpretation thereof trouble you. Belteshazzar, or Daniel, answered and said, My lord, the dream be to them that hate you, and the interpretation thereof to your enemies. So he's been led by God to use this approach. Verse 20. The tree that you saw, which grew and was strong, whose height reached unto the heaven, and the sight thereof to all the earth, whose leaves were fair, and the fruit thereof much, and in it was meat for all, under which the beasts of the field dwelt, and upon whose branches the fowls of the heaven had their habitation. It is you, O king, that are grown strong, and become strong, for the great thy greatness is grown, and reached unto heaven, and your dominion to the end of the earth. And so far, so good. I think Nebuchadnezzar would rather have liked that. And whereas the king saw a watcher and the Holy One coming down from heaven and saying, Hew the tree down and destroy it, yet leave the stump of the roots thereof in the earth, even with a band of iron and brass, in the tender grass of the field, and let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beasts of the field till 7 times pass over him. That's 7 years. This is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my lord the king. Now this is where it gets a little bit, I think Daniel must have been a bit concerned here. Verse 25, They shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and they shall wet thee with the dew of heaven, and 7 times shall pass over you, till you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomsoever he will. And whereas they commanded to leave the stump of the tree, the roots, the kingdom shall be sure unto you after that you shall have known that the heavens do rule. In other words, he's saying you're going to be 7 years like like a beast in the field, but at the end of that 7 years, you will be you'll regain your kingdom after you've learned that the heavens do rule. Now the point is, we've got to keep in mind here, this is written for us. Nebuchadnezzar, as you'll see, never got it, and the reason he couldn't get it was he was carnal. You've got to have God's Holy Spirit to understand this. That's where the problem lies. And whereas verse 27, Wherefore, O king, let my counsel be acceptable unto you, and break off thy sins of righteousness, thy sins by righteousness, and thy iniquities by showing mercy to the poor, if it may be a lengthening of your tranquility. Quit hacking people to pieces and making their houses like dunghills. You see, he was not a merciful king. This is a very brave act. Daniel could have had his head removed on the spot. It didn't. Now verse 28. All this came upon Nebuchadnezzar at the end of 12 months. So in other words, after this event had taken place, life had returned to normal. What were we doing 12 months ago? At the end of 12 months, he walked in the palace of the kingdom of Babylon. Now, for those of you who like dates, according to Dr. Hay, the year that his insanity commenced was 569 BC. The king spoke and said, Is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honour of my majesty? Boy, talk about me, myself and I. This is vanity taken to the nth degree. But there's a message there for us, isn't there? If you think about what we're being trained to be kings. Not just king like King Nebuchadnezzar, who happened to rule a world empire. We're being trained to be sons of God. We're being trained to be the first fruits. We're being trained to bring many people into the family of God. But at the end of the day, we're not going to be able to turn around and say anything like this. We're not going to get into the family of God and say, well, I'm here because of my righteousness and my great strength and my wonderful attitude and my... We're going to get there and say, we're here because of the mercy of the living God. You see, these lessons are actually for us. Nebuchadnezzar didn't get it. While the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, your kingdom is departed from you, and they will drive you from men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make you to eat grass as oxen, and seven times shall pass over you, until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, and gives it to whomsoever he will. That same hour was the thing fulfilled upon Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from men, and did eat grass as an oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till his hair was grown like eagle's feathers, and his nails like bird's claws. Now, can you imagine what would happen today if this happened to somebody like Mr. Obama or David Cameron or Prime Minister Cameron? Can you imagine the effect it would have with the whole world media? I mean, this news would have gone throughout the Kingdom of Babylon. I mean, they had their own method of communication, and word of mouth, something like this would have gone through the nation like lightning. And for 7 years, people could come and see King Nebuchadnezzar in the field, acting like a cow, jumping on grass, an oxen. For 7 years. Now, at the end of this day, this is what Nebuchadnezzar says in verse 34. At the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up my eyes unto heaven, and my understanding returned unto me, and I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that lives forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. Verse 35, and all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, and he does according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand or say to him, what are you doing? At the same time my reason returned to me, and for the glory of my kingdom mine honour and brightness returned unto me, and my counsellors and my lords sought unto me, and I was established in my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added unto me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honour the King of heaven, all whose works are truth, and his ways judgment, and those who walk in pride he is able to abase. Did Nebuchadnezzar get it? Well, he couldn't have done, because he was carnal. This is written for us today. If you look at what that says, we can often look, and I know particularly with the news, you see something come over the news and you think, ah, how can they do that? Like recently, Mr. Cameron has been forcing through this same-sex marriage thing through the Parliament. It's caused a total uproar. It's cost hours and hours and hours of government time. And it really only affects a few thousand people out of a population of 60 million. Why? The country is nearly bankrupt. We're involved in all sorts of things all over the world where we're in danger as a nation. And yet he's doing this, and you almost get to the stage of thinking, ugh. But you see, God put him there, and he's doing the right job to get this nation into the right state where what's going to happen to it is going to happen to it. Same in America. If you look at what's happening in America, the nation is going down. And people are doing nothing about it. It's almost like everything's sort of stopped, and people are just, they don't want to go home and watch a ball game. They're not interested in what's happening to their nation. All the manufacturing is being sucked out of America and squirted around the world, in China and Thailand and all the rest of it. And American people have got no jobs. You advertise for a McDonald's. Advertised for a couple of staff recently. Got 2,000 applicants, half of whom are college graduates. College graduates, quite willing to go and serve burgers just to get a job. That's being done because of the policies of the American government. Why is it being done? America is the most powerful nation on the face of the earth, and it's going to be totally destroyed. But it's got to be weakened first, and that's what's happening. So we shouldn't look at what Mr. Obama is and his government are doing and criticise. We should realise that God's put him there to do a specific job, to get America into a specific state where they can be overrun with no retaliation. Because that's happening. It's going to happen very soon. Very, very soon. It might happen sooner than we think. Now, we seem to have a bit of a time lapse here in the book. In chapter 5, we've got the son now of Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar, the king, verse 1, made a great feast to the household of his lords and drank wine before the thousand. So this was like a Buckingham Palace tea party, I guess. Having a great time. Belshazzar, while he tasted the wine, commanded to bring the gold and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple which was in Jerusalem, that the king and his princes, his wife and his concubines might drink. So here he is taking the gold and silver vessels that were taken out of God's temple and putting wine in them and allowing his people to drink out of these very vessels. Now, just to give you a little tiny bit of history, at this time the Persian army was not very far away. They'd already had one major battle, and they were in fact besieging Babylon. But the city was so great, the walls were so immense, that the people inside felt they were totally safe. There was no problem. These pesky Persians will soon go home, right? But of course it didn't work out that way. Daniel 5 verse 5. In the same hour came forth fingers of a man's hand and wrote over against the candlestick on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace, and the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. Now, if you can imagine, you're busy there having a great meal and quaffing wine by the liter, and all of a sudden part of a man's hand appears and starts writing on the wall. The first thing you'd probably do is call for the steward and say, what was in the stuff we're drinking? You know, but it says, then the king's countenance was changed. And don't you love Bible language? And his thoughts troubled him, so that the joints of his loins were loosed, and his knees smote one with another. In other words, his legs went like jelly. Now the queen, by reason of the words of the king and his lords, came into the banqueting house. Obviously she wasn't there. And the queen spoke and said, O king, live forever. Let not your thoughts trouble you, nor let your countenance be changed. There is a man in the kingdom in whom is the spirit of the holy gods, and in the ways of your father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, was found in him, whom the king Nebuchadnezzar, your father the king, I say, your father made master of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers. So it looks like that when the son took over, Daniel got promoted sideways. He wasn't in the king's presence. In fact, the king didn't even seem to know much about him. But fortunately, the queen did. Verse 13, then Daniel was brought before the king, and the king spoke and said to Daniel, are you that Daniel which art of the children of the captivity of Judah, whom the king my father brought out of Jury? He said, I have heard of you, that the spirit of the gods is in you, and that the light and understanding and excellent wisdom is found in you. And please let me have some of that, because my knees are still knocking, yeah? Verse 17. And Daniel answered and said before the king, he offered him gifts, by the way. I've just cut a bit out here, verse 17. He offered him all sorts of gifts and so forth. He said, and Daniel answered and said before the king, let thy gifts be to yourself, and give your rewards to another. Yet I will read the writing unto the king, and make known to him the interpretation. But first of all, I'm going to rub something into you, O king. Verse 18, O thou king, the most high God gave Nebuchadnezzar, your father, a kingdom and majesty and glory and honor, and for the majesty that he gave him, all peoples, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him, whom he would he slew, and whom he would keep alive, and whom he would he kept alive, and whom he would set up, and whom he would put down. But when his heart was lifted up, and his mind hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him, and he was driven from the sons of men, and his heart was made like the beasts, and his dwelling was that of the wild asses, and they fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew that the Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he appointeth over it whomsoever he will. There's no holding back here. He gave it to him full in the face. He reminded him of what had happened to his father, and I'm sure the son would have known about it. Verse 22. And thou, his son, O Belshazzar, have not humbled thine heart, though you knew all this. Now, again, there's 1,000 people or so in this room. 1,000 people. Talk about being in the spotlight. And this, he's addressing a king who was actually hated. He was actually hated by his own people. He was hated so much by his own people that many historians claim that when the Persians came in, they were welcomed by most of the people. They actually welcomed the Persians. This man was so vile. But if he takes the temple vessels and abuses them like that, you can guess what he was like. Verse 23, he says, "You've lifted up yourself against the Lord of heaven and have brought the vessels of his house before you, and you and your lords, your wives and your concubines have drunk wine in them, and you have praised the gods of silver and gold and brass, iron, wood and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know. And the God in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy days, have you not glorified?" You have not glorified the real God. "Then was the part of the hand sent before him, and this writing was written, and this is the writing that was written, Mene, Mene, Tekel, Upharsin. This is the interpretation of the thing. Mene, God has numbered your kingdom and finished it. Tekel, thou art weighed in the balance and art found wanted. Pheres, thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians." Remember, they were just outside. "Then commanded Belshazzar, and they clothed Daniel with scarlet, and put a chain of gold around his neck, and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. In that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain, and Darius the Median took over the kingdom, being about 62 years old." Basically, what happened is that the river flowed through the center of Babylon, and there were gates across the river, obviously like a grill, that stopped people getting in. So what the Persians did was they diverted the river, and on the dry riverbed they marched through. And they took the city. And they took the city so easy because there wasn't much resistance. Because people were only too glad to get rid of this king. And in actual fact, when you see what happened in Daniel 6, this was 539 BC, by the way, if you want a date. Daniel 6, verse 1, "It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom, and over these three presidents, of whom Daniel was the first. And the princes might give account to them, and the king should have no damage." These men were given the job of looking after the kingdom by the Persians. "Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and the princes, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm." So the question is, had Darius been told of what happened the previous night? Almost certainly. And you could probably tell from the reaction of the people that they were quite frankly glad to get rid of Belshazzar. But again, God is in total, absolute control. And this is the thing that, again, we're almost being hammered with this thought all the way through the book of Daniel. Daniel 6, verse 4. Here we go again. "Then the presidents and the princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom. But they could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him." But here's a warning for us today. This is where the threat will come from. Verse 5, Daniel 6, verse 5. "Then said these men, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God." Right? What's going to be the big problem with Europe? It's going to be the Sabbath day. The law of God. The sign that God gave between him and his people is going to be the crunch. And here we have a similar situation here. "Then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king and said, King Darius, live forever. All the presidents of the kingdom, the governors and the princes and the counselors and the captains have consulted together to establish a royal statute. To them make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions." I think this would probably appeal to the king. Oh, it sounds like a great idea, yeah. Then the king, when he heard these words, was... Oh, sorry, beg your pardon, I've skipped down a little bit. Daniel was caught up in this, because obviously he was just going to go ahead and pray to God as he normally always did. But the king was far from happy. Verse 14. Then the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased with himself, and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him, and he laboured till the going down of the sun to deliver him. But the problem is, if you read back in verse 15, no statute or decree which the king establishes may be changed. That's where the old saying people often use today, they'll say, oh, well, according to the laws of the Medes and the Persians. The reason is being that when a law was made with the Medes and the Persians, that was it. You could not disannul that law. It was fixed. Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spoke and said unto Daniel, your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. That's very interesting. Verse 17, and a stone was brought and laid at the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of his lords, that the purpose might not be changed concerning Daniel. Verse 18, then the king went to his palace and passed through the night fasting. He was really, really, really upset. Now there were instruments of music brought before him, and sleep went from him. He couldn't sleep. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste unto the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel. And the king spake and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is your God, whom you serve continually, able to deliver you from the lions? And Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. My God has sent his angel and has shut the lions' mouths, and they have not hurt me, for as much as before him innocency was found in me, and also before you, O king, I have done no hurt. In other words, Daniel's just saying, I'm not guilty of anything, I've not caused any hurt to you. Then the king was exceedingly glad for him, and commanded that he should take Daniel out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no manner of hurt was found upon him, because he believed in his God. And the king commanded, and they brought those men which had accused Daniel, and they would cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, their wives, and the lions had mastery over them, and break all their bones in pieces, as ever they came at the bottom of the den. In other words, as they hit the ground, that was it, finished. And if you've ever seen a lion on a kill, you'll realise that it doesn't take very long, no matter how big the animal is. Then King Darius wrote to all his people, nations and languages that dwelt upon all the earth, saying, peace be multiplied unto you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and steadfast forever, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even unto the end. That message is not for Darius. That message is for us today. As we go into what's coming up, it's probably going to be rather tough. And it's something we've got to keep in mind, that no matter what happens, you have the attitude of the three men who were thrown into the furnace. And he said, look, our God will protect us. And if he doesn't, it doesn't matter. We are not going to obey your law. We're not going to disobey God. So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and into the reign of Cyrus. Then we have Daniel 7. The four great beasts. First, just start down to verse 3. I'm not going to cover too much of this because this is all covered in various booklets. I'm just trying to get a flavour of what it did to Daniel in effect. Verse 13. I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came within the clouds of heaven and came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before me. And there was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom, and all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away, and his kingdom, which shall not be destroyed. And I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit in the midst of my body, and the visions in my head troubled me. I came near unto one of them, and stood by, and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me, and made me to know the interpretation of these things. This is God revealing things now to Daniel. It says, these great beasts which are four kings, which shall arise out of the earth. Verse 18, here's the key verse for us. But the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. So what's that talking about? 2,500 years ago, this is written. You can drop down to verse 21. Again, he's going through these things. He says, I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them, verse 22, until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, and the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. And it goes on then through the actual vision there. In verse 28 of chapter 7, Daniel was having a rough time comprehending a lot of this, because if you can imagine, how would you feel if something like Gabriel appeared to us? The knees would completely collapse. And he says, verse 28, hitherto is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my cogitations much troubled me, and my countenance changed in me, but I kept the matter in my heart. He was really battling with all this. It was so incredible that he was really, really struggling. In chapter 8, we have verse 16, Gabriel. So he came near where I stood, verse 17, and I was afraid and fell on my face, but he said to me, understand, O son of man, for the time of the end shall be the vision. Like, don't worry, Daniel, I'm going to give you this great vision, and it's not going to happen for 2,500 years. Like, well, why not wait 2,000 years at least before you give it to anybody? Why 2,500 years? He says, behold, I will make you to know what shall be in the last days of the indignation, and at the time appointed, the end shall be. God wants us to understand this prophecy was for the end of the age, for our time today, and there is an appointed time. It's all part of an overall plan. Verse 26, and in the vision of the evening and the morning, which was told in truth, therefore shut you up the vision, for it is for many days. In other words, write it down, and that's it. It's sealed. And I, Daniel, fainted and was sick certain days. Afterwards I rose up and did the king's business, and I was astonished at the vision, but none understood it. See, it wasn't to be understood until today, until our age, until God gave Mr. Armstrong the revelation, where the link between the book of Daniel, the book of Revelation, Matthew 24... And you put the whole lot together, and suddenly the whole thing fell into place. And then in chapter 9, in the first year of Darius, the son of Azariah, of the seed of the Medes, which was made king over the realm of the Chaldeans, in the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, understood by books the number of years whereof the word of the Eternal came to Jeremiah the prophet, that he would accomplish 70 years in the desolations of Jerusalem. I set my face unto the Lord God to seek by prayer and supplication with fasting and sackcloth and ashes. I'm not going to read all of Daniel's prayer for lack of time. It's perhaps something that we should all make a note of and just have a read through. Look at Daniel's attitude. Look what he's pointing out. Just a couple of points. Verse 13. He's praying now to God. He says, as it is written in the law of Moses, all this evil has come upon us. So he had that scripture we had earlier in Deuteronomy, didn't he? You know, it's going to come, all this evil is going to come upon you. Yet we made not our prayer before the Lord our God that we might turn from our iniquities and understand your truth. That's what repentance is all about, isn't it? It's about turning. Completely turning. And he reminds him in verse 15, and now, Lord our God, you have brought your people forth out of the land of Egypt with a mighty hand, and have gotten thee renown. As of this day, we have sinned. We have done wickedly. This whole thing of bringing the people, the slave people, out of Egypt was still very, very much in their minds, because it was such an awesome feat. And then he goes on down, let's just see if we can go down to verse 22. And this is where Gabriel's speaking. He said, he informed me and taught me and said, O Daniel, I am now come forth to give thee skill and understanding. And then he gives the 70 weeks prophecy. So if you want to understand the 70 weeks prophecy, just ask Mr. Bowles. No, I'm just joking. Let's go to Daniel 10. Daniel chapter 10. In those days, I, Daniel, was mourning 3 weeks. Now, this is obviously something that is pretty serious. I ate no pleasant bread, neither came flesh nor wine in my mouth, neither did I anoint myself at all, till 3 weeks were fulfilled. And in the 4th and 20th day of the first month, as I was by the side of the great river, which is Hiddekel, verse 10, let's drop down to verse 10, and behold, the hand touched me, and set me upon my knees and upon the palms of my hand. And he said to me, O Daniel, a man greatly beloved, understand the words that I speak to you, and stand upright. For unto thee am I now sent. And when he had spoken these words unto me, I stood trembling. Which is not an unnatural feeling in a situation like this. Then he said to me, Fear not, Daniel. From the first day that you did set your heart to understand, and to chasten yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I am come for thy words. So the minute Daniel got himself into this frame of mind, when he wanted to seek God, and he was repentant, and he was really upset for what the nation had done, God was there. God listens. God hears. Malachi 3, remember that? He's there. He's very attentive. God is a perfect father. He says, I am come to make thee understand what shall befall your people, again, in the latter days. For the vision is yet for many days, like 2,500 years. And he said, Knowest thou, wherefore I come unto you, and now I will return to fight with the prince of Persia, and when I am gone, lo, the prince of Grecia will come. I missed a verse out there, verse 13. It said, But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 120 days. But lo, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, and I remained there with the kings of Persia. What is going on in the spirit realm? What is going on? You know, this makes Star Wars look like very tame, doesn't it? I mean, you cannot kill the spirit. But there is something here, there is a resistance, there's some forces going on here that are beyond our comprehension. But Gabriel could not get to Daniel because of the prince of Persia. Who was the prince of Persia? Well, who's more powerful than Gabriel? Satan? Possibly? And what is going on there? And then you know, we get a clue then in verse 10. And then he says, Knowest thou wherefore I come to thee? And now I will return to fight with the prince of Persia. And when I am gone forth, lo, the prince of Grecia shall come. This is the next kingdom. So we're talking in kingdoms here. We're talking hundreds of years. Hundreds of years. For the Greece was Alexander the Great. He says, But I will show thee that which is noted in the scripture of truth, and it is none that holdeth of me in these things, but Michael your prince. Now, we come now to Daniel 11, which I'm going to skip totally. It says, this prophecy, I've just got written down here, this prophecy was written 2,500 years ago. This is a quote from Mr. Armstrong, sorry. This prophecy was written some 2,500 years ago. Could any man have written this prophecy and made it come to pass? Could any man foresee in advance that the events in this prophecy were going to happen? This prophecy, the longest in the Bible, begins 500 years before Christ and carries up to our time and into the immediate future. So what I would like to do in 2 weeks' time, God willing, when we get together in Bristol, I'm going to then go through Daniel 11 in detail. Because it is truly remarkable, and it's not just something that an interpretation that Mr. Armstrong was inspired to put on the chapter. There are many, many people who totally agree with that interpretation, that it's a complete history. It's perfect in every detail. Let's go to Daniel 12, because now we're here. We're almost at this point. Daniel 12 verse 1. And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince which stands for the children of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation even to that same time. And at that time your people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. And again, promises, promises, promises. We can't get away from them, can we? God has not left us without promises. He says, and many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake and come to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. So there's a resurrection. But thou, O Daniel, verse 3, and they that shall be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they shall stand many, and they shall turn many to righteousness as the stars of forever and ever. Read that again. And they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they shall turn many to righteousness. Who's this talking to? It's talking about the first fruits. That's our job in the millennium. Our job in the millennium is to bring people to the point where they can be saved, where they can be changed and put into the God's family. That's our job. There is there. And turn many to righteousness. Turn many, teach people God's way as opposed to Satan's way. But you, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book, even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. I think nothing is more astounding than that one little sentence, because that describes our age to a T. Here we're sitting here in a lounge. We've got one computer on the desk, which is, I hope you can hear the fan. It's really working hard here today. It's a bit warm. But just that little box of tricks there, this message can be heard anywhere in the world. And not only can it be heard anywhere in the world, it can be heard on the hour every hour, as far as I remember now, for the next wherever however long. I mean, 6 months' time, if somebody wants to refer to what I'm saying now, they can go in and listen to it. We have technology now which is mind-blowing. It's absolutely mind-blowing. In verse 8 of Daniel 12, and I heard, but I understood not. Then I said, oh my Lord, what shall the end of these things be? And he said, go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed and sealed until the time of the end. And at the time of the end, God raised up a man who opened his mind to understand that Daniel, Matthew 24 and Revelation, put together, tied in with the holy days, give you the whole plan of God. And it's all there. We've got it. We know it. But we didn't get it. It was given to us. Just as the interpretations of dreams were given to Daniel. It says, many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. And that is a promise. So how do we get wise? Just make a note of two scriptures. You can read them later. 2 Timothy 3 verse 15, it says, and that from a child you have known the holy scriptures, which are able to make you wise unto salvation. And also James 1 verse 5, of course, is one we always read. If any lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally. So are you battling? Well, we have no excuse. We can go to God and say, Father, we need wisdom. And it will be granted. And then the mysterious little verses at the end here, which have, there's more speculation about the next few verses than you can shake a stick at. Verse 11, and from the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away, which means it looks like it should be set up, so that's something we're watching for, and the abomination that makes desolate set up, there shall be 1,290 days. And we all know, of course, now that abomination that makes desolate is an army. It's an army that surrounds Jerusalem. Blessed is he that waits and comes to the 1,330 days, but you go your way to the end be, for you shall rest and stand in your lot at the end of days. He's saying, right, Daniel, you've done your job. Daniel would probably have been somewhere pushing 90 at this time. So, you know, he was an old man. And he said, you've done your job. Mr. Armstrong gave an explanation of the 1,335 days in a Pastoral General's report. It's on the website, November the 20th, 1979. And he says, never before have we understood these periods of 1260, 1290 and 1335 days. But it seems evident now a blessing is pronounced on us, God's church, who wait and endure until the 1335 days, approximately 1335 days prior to Christ's coming. In other words, it's backwards. You start at 1335 and go down to 1260. It says, but since no man can know the date of the hour of his coming, we probably shall not be able to know the exact day that this 1335 days begins. It says, but apparently that is the time when our work shall end. Now, our work at the moment is on the internet. We've got Mr. Armstrong on the internet in a way that he could never have conceived. It's beyond it, what, three-fifths of the world's population are on the internet. Four or five billion people have got access to this information if God so directs their minds. And that we've been guided to put this on there, and it's quite incredible the amount of information that's available. And we're now in a situation where we can have almost as many people as want now access the website at the one time, and it will be there. They'll all be able to get that information. And I reckon right at the end there's going to be a bit of a flurry when people try and find out just what's going on and you know, was it really right and what did he really say. The Get Back on Track website is a gold mine. But you see, it says, but apparently that is the time when our work shall end. That work can be ended at the flick of a switch. It happens all the time in nations like Syria and Iran. The government just, it's gone. Internet's finished. Now people get around it a little bit. But when we have a massive, massive upheaval, and the Europeans, because the Europeans are already working on their own version of the internet, it can be cut off. And then we will know in one day. Because when that, there's prophecies that talk about it, that there'll be a famine of the word. Famine of the hearing of the word. It'll be gone. Completely gone. It says, that will be at a time when the united Europe shall appear, the revival of the Holy Roman Empire. That's when we will, at the same time, we will see the Pope with the beast laying out the direction that they're going. And we should be warned and ready to be taken to a place of refuge and safety from the Great Tribulation. And I'm sorry, but those people who are not clued in and tuned in to what Mr. Armstrong taught are not going to get this warning. Because that's the only place it appears. You can check until you're blue in the face. It's in that Pastor John's report. This is what the ministry back then was supposed to be preaching. I never heard a sermon on this. I don't know whether you did. Maybe you were lucky. 45 days later, the beast army surrounds Jerusalem. 30 days later, the Great Tribulation will probably start with a nuclear attack on London and Britain, and possibly the same day or immediately afterwards on the United States and Canadian cities. Mr. Armstrong was just talking in the broadcast about the effect of hydrogen bombs. I want to close by reading the scripture that we started with. Go back to Isaiah 46, if you would. Yeah, Isaiah 46 and verse 9. But we'll read right to the end of the chapter. It says, remember the former things of old. For I am God, and there is none else. I am God, and there is none like me. Declaring the end from the beginning, and from the ancient times the things which are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, I will do all my pleasure. Calling a ravenous bird from the east, the man that executes my counsel from a far country, yea, I have spoken it. I will also bring it to pass. I have purposed it, and I will do it. Hearken unto me, you stout-hearted, that are far from righteousness. I bring near my righteousness. It shall not be afar off. And my salvation will not tarry, and I will place salvation in Zion. In Zion. And in Isaiah, when it mentions Zion, it's almost all the church. For Israel, my glory. Israel, the glory of Israel, the salvation of Israel, will come from Zion, because we'll be there to teach those people. And there's just one more thing we can just do in closing. Turn back to Isaiah 2. We've got to put this in. Isaiah 2. Isaiah 2, verse 2. And it shall come to pass in the last days, here again, the last days, that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains, and shall be exalted above all the hills, and all nations shall flow. See that? And shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow to it. This is a real event. It's going to happen. As mind-blowing as it is, it's going to happen. And not only is it going to happen, we are key players in that. That's what makes it so unbelievable, really. We are going to be the first fruits. We are going to be ruling and reigning with that Jesus Christ. And verse 3, and many people shall go and say, come you and let us go to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. And he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law. That's what we'll be doing. We'll be teaching people God's way of life. Out of Zion, the church, the first fruits, shall go forth the law, and the word of the eternal from Jerusalem.